This is Meet the Movie Press. It's May the 3rd, 2019 on the show today. Tributes to Peter Mayhew and John Singleton, Avengers bust blocks, Sonic reaction plus Detective Pokemon review and the rest of the week's big releases. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talks, Meet the Movie Press.
This is Meet the Movie Press. My name is Simon Thompson. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at ShowbizSimon and on my Facebook page. This is Simon Thompson. This is Meet the Movie Press. It's May the 3rd, 2019. We're going to start the show on a slightly downbeat note this week, unfortunately, because we lost two legends. But before we discuss them, I want to introduce you to the panel. First of all, Dimitri and Scott. Dimitri, who are you? Where can we find you, please?
You can find me here on Popcorn Talk Network's Meet the Movie Press and on the Twitters at DMovies1701.
Hello, Dimitri.
Hello.
Everyone's very low key this morning.
Yeah.
And I look like a midget on this camera.
I'm actually sitting on a cushion, to be honest with you.
I am Scott Menzel.
Yeah. Ooh, where can we find you, Scott?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at the other Scott M.
You shrunk.
Well, I'm literally on a booster seat, and it's in tribute to Peter Mayhew, possibly the tallest man I've ever come across in my entire life. This is Meet the Movie Press. Thank you so much for joining us this week. As always, if you're watching the show live, you can take part in the chat room on YouTube. A lot of people already in there. Miguel Gomez is in there this morning. Good morning. Jenna James is in there. Ashley Menzel is in there. Sarah Brockle is in there. Carney Egan is in there. Fishman Dildo is in there. Zephyr is in there. So well done, everybody, for being part of this. Obviously, you are the reason that we do the show. Having this dialogue, it's really important. I was going to start off talking about the Avengers box office this week, because that's one of the week's biggest stories. But unfortunately, we lost two insane legends in the industry. Obviously, John Singleton early this week, so we'll talk about him in just a moment. But first of all, yesterday, Peter Mayhew, obviously best known for being Chewbacca in the original Star Wars movies. The reaction online, certainly from people that he knew but also fans, has been incredible. I mean, I know, Dimitri, especially, you're a big Star Wars fan.
Yeah, sure.
Even wearing the shirt in tribute today. Peter Mayhew, for you, what did he mean to you, and what's kind of your experience as a fan, and did you ever get to meet him?
I've only seen him passing in conventions, so I never got to meet the gentleman. But for me, you got to remember back in, 1977, when Star Wars came out, what was great about the original Star Wars was how practical they did effects back then. So as a fan, I would read the star logs. I would read everything that I could to learn about the making of and the behind the scenes. And knowing that there was somebody behind that was playing Chewbacca, and knowing this very tall man, you got to know these people, because it's so rare that you hear about Peter Mayhew, David Prowse, Kenny Baker, who was doing R2-D2, right? As a fan, you got to know these, and they got to play these characters that became so beloved just from that first movie, mind you.
Yeah.
Without the series going on, and you realize that it was his eyes, like Peter Mayhew, I'm talking about now, and just what he gave, he really breathed life. Chewbacca was a character.
Yeah.
And that's what George Lucas wanted. They didn't want it to be a man underneath the suit, but when you met the man underneath the suit and you read about that man, he was as kind and he was a gentleman, and you saw great behind-the-scenes photos with him in the cast without the mask off.
Yeah.
And as a kid, as an 11-year-old, it was just amazing to see.
And one thing as well, certainly watching it, is the fact that obviously we're living in an age now with where there's CGI. Right. There was an element of stuff that you could do back then, and even in the more recent history. But Star Wars, they used a really tall guy to play a really tall character. And really small people to get inside robots and play to do Ewoks and stuff. So it really was the purest form of physical theater when it came to them. This wasn't a regular-sized dude on stilts in a big furry outfit. He was like 7 foot.
Yeah.
You know, it really was the real deal. Scott, and your feelings on this.
He was also cast because of his piercing blue eyes.
Yeah.
Because George Lucas felt, if anything, you have to see a Wookiee's eyes.
Yeah.
You have to see his eyes, because that is going to be his heart. That is why you're going to love you. This is like above and beyond a pet. Mm. You're going to love this creature, this character, this animal, this Wookiee.
Yeah.
And it's because of those sympathetic eyes that you can tell from when he was angry. You could tell when he was joking.
Yeah.
And that was all Peter Mayhew. So
100%. Scott, your thoughts on this?
I mean, obviously, I'm not as close to the franchise as you are, Dimitri. But that being said, I mean, there is something very unique about an actor who was able to play one character and be known for one character for almost 40, 50 years.
You can probably count those actors in the industry on maybe two hands.
Right.
Maybe two hands.
And I mean, to be so well, well known and respected because of which, I mean, that's a credit to him. And I think it ties into a lot what you were saying, is that even though it is a character that we've come to love in a franchise, it's his personality and the way that he carried that character and brought it to life that really makes it stand out. And it's a lost art form that we have now where people don't do this anymore. Everything's all about the CGI instead of an actual actor being in a costume and bringing it to life.
And that's didn't look cheesy.
Absolutely.
And it didn't look cheesy.
And that's by no means a criticism of the fact that obviously a lot of CGI is used in movies these days. But you really can't beat that authenticity. Obviously, a lot of people from, you know, fans and people that work with him paid a lot of tribute online. Mark Hamill tweeted yesterday, he was the gentlest of giants, a big man with an even bigger heart who never failed to make me smile, and loyal friend who I love dearly. I'm grateful for the memories we shared, and I'm a better man for just knowing him. Thanks, Pete. R.I.P. Peter Mayhew. Star Wars as well. This was a tweet on behalf of Kathleen Kennedy. We're deeply saddened today by the news of Peter Mayhew's passing. Since 1976, Peter's iconic portrayal of his loyal, lovable Chewbacca has been absolutely integral to the character's success and to the Star Wars saga itself, which is 100% true. And obviously, Harrison Ford is among those people who've paid tribute. One that touched me today, actually, as well. I was reading this when I was having a bath this morning. Edgar Wright tweeted his brother. Thank you. Edgar Wright texted his brother about, obviously, Peter's passing. And Edgar tweeted, text with my brother. The only time I ever saw Peter Mayhew in the flesh was before the premiere of The Force Awakens. And I remember him coming on stage, but not the sweet moment coming off. This is the text that was between Edgar Wright and his brother. R.I.P. Chewie, glad we saw him at Force Awakens. Absolutely, I'll forever remember Harrison Ford helping him off stage like a true co-pilot. So sweet, so sad. And that's it. I mean, this is really kind of where Peter fitted into the whole Star Wars thing, is you see pictures of him dressed as Chewbacca, and you see the cast hugging him, and you would see him at premieres, and, you know, and I mean this in no disrespect to people currently part of the new Star Wars, but you would see people getting giggly when these heritage actors would come by, the likes of Anthony Daniels, the likes of Peter Mayhew. And they get to experience this firsthand, the original Star Wars, and generation after generation know that he was the original Chewbacca.
Yeah.
You know? And think about how amazing that is, too. And it just goes back to what I was saying earlier. When Star Wars came out and the special effects extravaganza that it was one of the first times where making ofs were released in magazines and or books. So you got to see the people underneath.
It was a big deal.
I can't think of another movie outside of the motion capture that happens today, right? Yeah. I can't think of another movie where audiences, if they chose to be knowledgeable about it, and fans, where they got to know Kenny Baker, where they got to know... Look at Anthony Daniels.
Yeah.
Like, what else is he known for outside of C-3PO and giving character to that?
100%.
So when we lose one of these people who breathed life into a character that was so beloved as the co-pilot, it says a lot for the franchise and for what it's done.
And talking of people paying tributes, Jenna James is in the chat today. R.I.P. John Singleton and Mr. Mayhew, a.k.a. Chewie. Jody's saying hi. Kame Chewie is co-piloting that great Millennium Falcon in the sky. A lot of people, Zeno Hour, R.I.P. and thank you, Peter Mayhew and John Singleton. Senior Nerd, may the force be with you, Peter Mayhew. What a Wookiee. Kane Egan saying, Peter Mayhew truly embraced not only his character, but the love of his fans. And I think that's really important as well. And we're going to one more thing on this, Dimitri, then we need to move on.
No, speaking of the fandom, too, whenever he showed up, he did a lot of these conventions.
Yeah.
And he was just beloved, and he would take pictures with fans. He just, he embraced it.
Yeah.
And so it's, it really is a, it, it's very sad.
There's a friend of mine, actually, one other reaction I want to do, read is a friend of mine, Andy. She worked at a fan convention, quite recently in London. And it was where Peter actually was. And there was a lovely interaction between the two of them. I'm just going to find it on her Facebook page, which is amazing. Here we go. I had the unexpected pleasure of meeting Peter Mayhew in March at the London Film and Comic Con. We'd both taken a break in the back room to rest for a few minutes, and it was clear that he was extremely tired. I was nervous to approach him as he's such a legend, but I asked him if he needed anything, snacks, drinks, etc. He politely declined, but very sweetly asked how my day was going. I remember saying something to the effect of brilliantly, but even more so now that I've had the chance to meet you. I also said, instead of all the food and drink they provide, perhaps a few pillows to rest on would be handy during breaks too. He laughed and nodded, so I very inappropriately joked and said, motioning to and patting her chest, she's very well endowed, you can always rest on me. Everybody needs a bosom for a pillow, as was said once. We both laughed loads, and he gave me a very big cuddle. I thanked him for the few minutes that he shared and left him to rest in peace, which I think, you know, is a really, I say, touching way to remember Peter Mayhew and his interaction with fans. That kind of reaction is great. Not to be Debbie Downer on the show today, but obviously we lost another legend, John Singleton, this week. At 51, he had a stroke quite recently, and they turned his life support machine off. Often remembered mostly for Boys in the Hood, which is a movie that when I remember seeing it in movie theatres, it really had a deep effect. Obviously, I am not an African-American from Compton, so this is not a story that I personally related to. But that is a movie that touched me. It came from such a different world for me. But it touched me in such a personal way, that story and the way that story was told, that it really sparked my interest in African-American narrative cinema. And I became a fan of his work, and I had the pleasure of interviewing him a number of years ago when the movie Four Brothers came out for the Sun newspaper in the UK. John Singleton, great, often underappreciated by the industry, though, and sometimes one of those cases where when you lose someone, you look at their legacy. First of all, Scott, your thoughts and feelings on obviously the loss of John this week.
You know, I was, you know, unfortunately, when the news broke, I think it was about a week and a half ago when he went in the hospital.
Yep.
You know, I just, deep down, I had a bad gut feeling that it was not going to be good news. And when I woke up that one, I think it was two or three mornings ago, and I saw it, I was, you know, obviously I was saddened by the news. But it really is a travesty in a lot of ways for, as you brought up, Simon, the African-American community. I mean, Boys in the Hood, Poetic Justice, Higher Learning were all films that I saw at a very young age that really kind of showed me a different lifestyle.
Yeah.
Even though I grew up in a household with, you know, black brothers, you know, kind of seeing the struggles and like the realities of their life, you know, brought on the screen so realistically and wonderfully acted and beautifully told stories. I think he was just really a master of that. It's funny you mentioned Four Brothers because I actually think it's one of my favorites of
his. It's a great movie. It often doesn't get the love.
I was going to say that too. Same here.
Yeah, it's a really great movie. And I mean, you know, he's been very consistent as a filmmaker. Obviously, in his later years, I feel like because of the industry changing a lot, he's kind of gotten less and less work. And I don't know why. I never understood. I still to this day don't understand Hollywood.
Yeah.
But you know,
we speak to people in Hollywood all the time, and often they don't understand Hollywood.
And it's like someone who has such a background and a legacy for making. I mean, you know, Boys in the Hood. Then he worked with Michael Jackson on multiple videos. You know, you kind of wonder like where it went wrong. You know, like why from 2000? I'm just looking at his filmography here. Why from 2005? to recently, there was like no work involved. He wasn't handed anything.
It's really interesting. It's a conversation that I had with another director about a movie that has a predominantly African-American cast this week. And I had the conversation about it. It's almost like Hollywood for a number of years forgot what to do with women and forgot what to do with African-Americans other than typecasting them in like...
Comedies, or
a character that would want to shoot you, whether it's a gangster or a bad cop or whatever. They were the dirty characters.
Right.
And I think the same kind of happened, and we've discussed this a number of times before about this, oh, well, this is aimed at a certain audience, so you wouldn't get it because you're not that demographic. And I think Hollywood kind of forgot what to do with a lot of black filmmakers. Because Hollywood didn't know what to do with black audiences. They didn't know how to service audiences. And I use black because it's not just in America, it's internationally. And I think he was a casualty of that. And I think, unfortunately, even though he's done some amazing work, they're just seeing a renaissance where Hollywood is getting that, do you know what, it's not just black audiences that want to see movies about black characters, and we don't want to see black characters just done as hoodlums or whatever, or ancillary characters. It's he was just starting to have a resurgence.
It's interesting because I think, you know, John suffered almost from the Wayans brothers movies. Where, like, I felt like they were all just these dumb comedies about, like, weed and drinking and just, like, you know, really showing, like, the hood
the
in, like, such a negative...
the worst of the image, worst. Yeah.
And it was funny because their films at that time really succeeded, and they did so well,
yeah.
You know, to the point where they made, like, the Scary Movies, the first three of them.
Yeah.
You know, it's unfortunate because... and this is, I guess, where a lot of the criticism comes from nowadays, where, like, people are like, finally it's our time where we get, you know... African-American stories told by African-American filmmakers and women telling their stories, because I think we often forget that a lot of times that all along we have white comedies, we have white action movies, we have white dramas, but like it seems like for the other backgrounds you're like, you can have one.
Yeah
it's like, right. You can have comedy right now,
and it was a case where if you have a story that you want to tell about black culture or African-Americans, and you want to do it, it's great. You can have your Denzel Washingtons or your Morgan Freemans, but it'll be a white guy that directed it.
Yes.
Because it's black directors that do hoodlum movies,
right?
Like Bill Duke and people like that. It's like, give that to the black directors and give all the positive stories about black people, that, you know, the £7 and all that kind of thing, to the white directors. So I think kind of Hollywood forgot what to do with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the love that was outpoured for John Singleton this week was incredible. And this is from directors and actors across the board who appreciated the work. And he gave opportunities to people.
Yeah.
You know, even when he wasn't in the limelight, he used the light that he had to be able to push other people forward. And, you know, whether you're, you know, an actor or a director or a producer or a writer, he was there to fight your corner.
Yeah, and don't forget, too, that what Boys in the Hood did was, and it wasn't just for the black audience. I mean, just across the board, it introduced many people to this lifestyle. Like, it brought this to light about the gangs and everything. And it really was a hard-hitting movie. It launched the careers of many people. It launched his career, for sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, he had the unfortunate task of going into the second Fast and Furious movie without Vin Diesel, right? So, but, you know, he went along. He did Shaft.
Yeah.
And again, Four Brothers.
Which great is movie.
It's a really underappreciated film with some really good performances, and it's a strong, good, what would you call it, an action drama?
I'd call it an action drama,
It's
but really with the weight on the drama over the action.
For sure.
You know, it was a great movie. But again, I mean, a lot of studios and audiences didn't know what to do with it, because it's like, that's not what we know.
Right.
So it's interesting. But so, John Singleton, another terrible loss this week. Before we move on, I just want to mention a couple of people here in the chat. Sarah Brockle, Simon, I feel so lied to. I totally thought you were black and from Compton.
Uh-huh.
I know, it's a popular misconception. Carl, watching from the Philippines. Hey, Carl, how are you doing? Zeno Hour, Boys in the Hood is one of the best and groundbreaking movies of the 1990s. Check it if you haven't. I agree. I mean, really, when you look at movies from the 90s, two of the filmmakers that really stand out for me that were new talent at the time were John Singleton and Quentin Tarantino. And if you look at the effect that both of them have had on the industry, just as a whole, it's a remarkable legacy. It really, really is. Fishman Dildo, they don't want to deal with people who are set in their ways and aren't willing to compromise. No, I think that's fair. Send your nerds, boys in the herd is mine. But also, to be fair, John was also someone who, having met him a couple of times on red carpet, he was a very genuine guy who loved working, wanted to work and tell great stories. Boys in the Hood is my top 20 favourite movie list, but Poetic Justice and Baby Boy are extremely underrated. I will terribly miss John Singleton, that from Senor Nerd. And Kame Egan, do you think the Academy Awards will give John Singleton a posthumous award for all of his films? I don't think so. And to be honest with you, I think that kind of award, if you hand them out kind of just because somebody's died, I think you sometimes devalue that award. You know, it's not like you have to have there will be a lot of people that will die this year, and there'll be a lot of people who have died in the last couple of years who get these awards, and a lot of people who are alive that deserve these awards. And I don't think that would be right in this case. Recognition, I think, is really what would be the overriding factor here.
Yeah.
Okay, we have a lot to get through elsewhere on the show. Also, coming up later, we've got reviews of Pokemon and this week's big releases, including Meeting Gorbachev, which I saw in a Q&A with Werner Herzog this week, which is great. Okay, let's talk about Avengers Endgame. The box office this week did quite well.
It did okay.
Did all right. I think it's really good that people are getting behind these indie movies. It's important to support indie cinema.
Is. It really is.
Yeah, by these little distributors. Okay, I mean, we kind of predicted that it was going to go bananas, and it was going to get a billion. I think we were saying within the first couple of days and definitely the week, and we were proved right. I mean, to be honest with you, it didn't take a rocket science to work that out. But it looks again like this week there's really not a lot of competition. There's a couple of movies out, but certainly nothing that is going to challenge it. So it's going to have another week this week with a very small drop off. How far do you think this can go, guys, when you look at this box office? Are we looking at a 2 billion? Obviously, Avatar is a big target for this. Do you think we're going to get the 2 billion plus? Do you think it could make more than that with ease?
I think it'll be 2 billion. I mean, I don't, you know, the thing is with Marvel movies and Marvel fans is that a lot of them go back out and see it multiple times. Yes. And I think with the, I mean, I think this is actually a pretty solid week for movies, and next week's pretty good as well. But I think it also shows the dominance of Disney and Marvel at the box office.
Yeah.
So
Captain Marvel, only out about 4 weeks ago, is still in the top 10.
Oh, my God. It was like number two last week.
It was
like
number two last week. Yeah.
So, I mean, it was the same play that he did with Black Panther.
Yeah.
Remember?
It was crazy because for the people who hadn't seen Captain Marvel yet, and they couldn't get into Avengers, they were going to see Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
it's crazy. I'm not going to go on the talk about how Disney's like, it's so unfair what they're doing. But regardless, I think this has...
I think you kind of just did.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's okay. No, it's fine.
I mean,
the
potential of them getting that high number, I think it has the... I think it's going to do it. I really do. I think it's going to top Avatar.
Yeah. I think it is. Dimitri?
I mean, again, we talked about this last week. At most, so it did what? 300... Domestically, it did what? 340 million, right?
Something along those lines. Yeah.
So even half that, which is a 50% drop, still gets you over. That's like $170 million dollars.
Yeah.
And so, but you're looking anywhere from 50 being best case scenario, could be high 40s. Worst case scenario would be 70% off, which ain't gonna happen, right? So you're still looking at a gross domestically of somewhere 150 plus.
Yeah.
That's crazy. And to this week's movies, as much as I like the long shot, you're right. People, number one, it's a wave. So people who couldn't see it last week or avoided the crowds or avoided theaters that had measles, they're going to go this week.
Yeah.
My best friend who saw it last week is taking his family tonight.
I was going to say, I mean, there was a, I think it was Fandango actually did a survey, and it's got the highest number of return visits of any Marvel movie.
Makes sense.
Something like 75% of people who've seen it already are going back to see it again, either, you know, on their own or with friends taking people. I mean, this weekend's box office for this, it's looking at somewhere between 150 and 160 million in its second week, which, okay, is a drop-off from last week, but still there are many movies
that's
that
opening
would,
weekend for almost 90% of movies. 95%
they would love
of
to have an opening right. weekend yeah. of that, and then of 150,000 to 160,000. And the thing is, I mean, yes, it does cannibalize this week's other new releases, because if you're looking at the expect, so we're looking at basically the top 10. This is according to Box Office Mojo. Avengers Endgame, it's a done deal. It's going to be number one. So you're looking at 150 to 160. Longshot is then expected to be number two with 12.
Right. I mean, that's there's a little bit of a difference.
Bit of a difference there.
Well, but some disparity.
Yeah. So
we
it's
don't say.
It's kind
I
of
do
like.
Say.
I also kind of feel a little bad. I'm like, why wouldn't you hold off Longshot for just a couple more weeks? Or release it like maybe 2 weeks earlier. I don't know.
They get locked into those dates. Yeah. And that's what the problem is.
And again, when you're locking in a date, right?
Yeah. But you can change. I mean, you can change these things. Like, there's a Brad Pitt movie that was supposed to be coming out in like 3 weeks'
well,
time.
That's another story. Yeah. That's a Disney story.
That's a different story.
That's a Disney story.
Yeah, because everybody knew that was going to happen. Yeah. Yes. Everybody was more surprised as why it took so long for Ad Astra to be taken off the schedule. And it wasn't like it was moved. They said it just disappeared.
Right.
Oh yeah. So, no, it's gone.
But with Avengers Endgame, when you're doing this sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
You can only go by what you have for historical reference. So you're probably looking at Infinity War, and then you're probably looking at the weeks after Infinity War.
Yeah.
So this movie, nobody expected it to be. We all said it was going to be big. A lot of people didn't expect a billion worldwide within 3-4 days.
Yeah.
The entire weekend, right? So it's crazy. And once you're locked in on that date, it's summer. You have a commitment to get that out as soon as possible. It's counter-programming. I think it'll do okay. But that's the bottom line. They're not going to change the date at this point because summer's crowded already.
Yeah.
And again, if you're looking at historical... So,
but I mean, even long-term, it's crazy to pick that day anyway when you know...
Right.
When you know
that
there's a juggernaut. You know, it's like sort of Fast and Furious and someone's got, you know, a Maserati and you go, don't worry, I got my smart car, we'll be fine.
I'm always surprised by this, in all fairness. I mean, I get what you're talking about with the counter-programming, but the thing is that sticking a movie like that, I mean, almost all the releases this week, you know, in the middle of summer, in between the Avengers and Pokemon and John Wick and Lion King and Aladdin. Yeah, like it's just everything else is dead.
May is a month of big guns this year. It but really is.
There isn't another rated R movie, if somebody has already seen Avengers, which many have, that they may want to go to.
Yeah.
Again, this is where that counter-programming works. That's why you can release a chick flick like after or against an Avengers Endgame.
I wouldn't want to be the hustle right now.
Oh, no.
I wouldn't want to be the hustle right now.
But
I'll be honest.
Again,
with you.
That's another movie that I. Who knows that's even coming out?
Yeah, I know. I had that conversation with someone this week. But I mean, you mentioned the Avengers movie and you called it Infinity War a couple of seconds ago. I think you mean Endgame.
No, I meant.
Oh, you did mean.
No, I
Infinity
meant
War.
Because.
Okay,
no, I was talking about. The only historical reference you have is Infinity War.
That's fine. I actually joked on Twitter the other week about the fact that box office is now going to be divided into two times. There's before Endgame and after Endgame. And I think that's very much the case. I mean, you know, this week it's Get Out of the Way. I mean, there are movies I kind of feel sorry for all the other movies coming out this week because there are some good movies, some really well-reviewed movies coming out this week, and they're just going to get swallowed up. So, I mean, I think, obviously, I mean, you guys, I agree with you. I think it's going to be over $2 billion quite easily. I really think it's going to surpass Avatar. I think we've seen from the strength and the renewed energy it's giving the likes of Captain Marvel, I think it's just going to be, you know, it's going to run and run. And I think the clever I did wonder if Avengers Endgame was going to cannibalize Captain Marvel and it was going to drop off. But in fact, I think it's done the opposite with that character, because now I think people have seen more of Captain Marvel. People who are like, not too fussed, are then getting a bite of this Captain Marvel cherry and going like, okay, maybe I'll go and see a full movie based on her right away. Right. So I think it's kind of shrewd marketing. But the downside is I was going to the farmer's market last weekend. God, that sounds middle class. Going to the farmer's market in Hollywood last weekend. And my wife and I looked in the window of the arc light, and it's like everything was like Avengers Endgame, Avengers Endgame, Avengers Endgame, Avengers Endgame, Curse of La Llorona, Avengers Endgame,
God,
Endgame.
God,
Shazam, Avengers Endgame, Avengers, Captain Marvel. And it was like, oh, come on, man.
Well, I went to Chicago, and they had this Avengers recruitment center set up over there. And then they also had the poster. No, I did not. But the poster was all over. I went to the airports. The poster was all over in there. It's like, oh, my God. Like, they made sure.
It was an event picture.
Yeah, that you cannot avoid
it. And don't forget the social media, too. Most every talent or celebrity has gone on saying, just saw it. Awesome, awesome. And it just pushes that wave.
It is the most tweeted about movie of all time.
Yeah.
I mean, that's bananas.
Yeah.
You know. A lot of people in the chat, we're going to move on from this in a second because we have so much to get through today. Okay, Fishman Dildo, Endgame gave me my money's worth, which is great. Fishman Dildo, again, pre-sales for this week are through the roof. Still, they are. I mean, the figures are so strong for this. Jody, question. After it made $55 million worldwide so far, most of it made overseas, it only had $14 million budget. Do you think it could be big enough for a sequel? I think you're talking about, I'm not quite sure what movie you're talking about there, Jody. Can you clarify in the chat? Xeno Hour, I didn't see it yet. Every showing was sold out. Yeah, I mean, that seems to be the case. Fishman Dildo, Endgame is a lot better than it has a right to be. It's a fantastic movie. It's a really good movie. Sarah saying, Dimitri, summer is crowded till August when we ran out of summer movies because they released them all in March and April. I think that's true, actually. Mm-hmm. Summer is starting earlier and earlier every single year. And there's kind of an exhaustion by the end of the season. Right. And by the time you get to the end of July, it's like, you know, it's that little whimper.
Well, that always used to be when they were released in May.
Yeah, no.
You'd get that in September.
I'd like to go back to that because there is that kind of September before you really get to the horror movies coming out now, exactly. The beginning of October, and then first week of November, you get the holiday movies coming out. Fishman Dildo, there's plenty of room for long shot and end game. I like both types of movies. Yeah, it's not about not liking different types of movies. It's the fact that is there room for these movies for people to go and see. I mean, I think a lot of people who watch Endgame will also want to watch Longshot, but if they have to choose one movie to go and see, they'll want to go and see the movie. They'll put their money down for the movies that everybody's talking about right now because they want to be part of the conversation.
Absolutely.
And they'll catch Longshot maybe a couple of weeks, maybe when it goes to a couple of dollar theaters, and then probably when it hits streaming and everyone will go like, oh my God, it's a great movie. Why didn't nobody go and see it in cinemas?
I mean, we could talk marketing.
Yeah, Singer Nerd saying it won't catch Avatar. Xeno Hour saying, hey Simon, hello. When are you dropping your review for Endgame XXX, a porn parody? Tomorrow. Okay, we're going to move on from this Sonic the Hedgehog trailer. First of all, render freak. And secondly, the reaction obviously came through yesterday on this, where the director of the movie is saying, we get your reactions. Everybody freaked out. The trailer didn't look good for the movie, full stop. It did not make me want to see this movie. A lot of people don't like the look of Sonic, and they don't like the teeth. Sonic has teeth. People don't like that. So the reaction online, the director's gone, okay, we hear you. We're now going to go and redo Sonic. You know, what degree, we don't know, but they're going to redo Sonic, so I think it's bye-bye TC Pegs. But for me, this is really interesting. It sets an interesting and potentially dangerous precedent in the industry where fans see a trailer, they see footage from the movie, they go, me no likey. So then a movie studio goes, okay, great, we're going to change it and we're going to give it what the fans want. Can be quite dangerous. Because once you start to go down that road, especially in a time where we've got man babies boycotting movies, for me, I'm kind of like, I know, oh, holy crap, it's Sonic. I don't know. Guys, give me your thoughts on this. Dimitri, first of all.
Sonic the Hedgehog, look.
It's not a movie we need. I didn't say we needed it.
Well, no. It was at CinemaCon, and they did a fairly big presentation of Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah.
And when the presentation got really good is when they focused on Jim Carrey.
Yes.
And that actually made me want to see the movie.
Okay.
Because it's the Jim Carrey we haven't seen since, like, Ace Ventura.
Mm.
It's that silly Jim Carrey. So when he came out on stage and they recut a trailer that was all focused on his character, Dr. Robotnik, and I'm like, that's the movie I want to see. The Sonic stuff, I was like, eh? Okay. It's Sonic, huh?
It's funny. I was going to say that because we saw that. We were sitting next to each other at CinemaCon, and I literally, like, I turned to him when that trailer played, and I was like, eh, that does that look good? No. And then Jim Carrey came out throwing popcorn in his face. And then, I mean, they showed this, like, the same length trailer with Jim Carrey. And, I mean, the reaction went from, like, to, like, yeah, I want to see this movie. That being said, to kind of tackle on your little point, I think this is very interesting the way they're doing this. I don't know if this is a new way of actually, you know, how they used to do, you know, how they do test screenings. Mm. This is an interesting way for something that's visual.
Yeah.
To kind of throw a trailer out, a test trailer, get the reaction, and see, like, hey, because it's digital, we can go back in and tweak the shit out of this.
Yes. No, that does allow that. But there's also a reason why we can't, and this is actually what I'm trying to say is summarized really nicely by Zeno Hour, who in the chat has just said, I feel very uncomfortable with social media bullying filmmakers into how to make movies. This isn't good. You don't go to a baker and tell him how to bake bread. You don't go to a mechanic and tell him how to fix your car. You don't go to school and tell the teachers how to, you know, teach your kids. So why do you think that you have the right to tell? Because the thing is, if ultimately you make a movie, okay, so you listen to the fans, you make a movie that fans want to see. Yeah, you make a movie in part for the fans, but what about the other people who aren't hardcore fans, who are just the average guy or the average Jane, who wants to go and just see a movie that they want to see, that is a movie that is what the filmmaker's vision that they wanted to put out there. And they don't give a fuck about teeth.
Yeah,
you know, they ultimately they don't give a fuck about teeth. They don't give a fuck about what Sonic looks like. They just want to see this movie. Well, the kids want to see. This is not a movie that is aimed at 25-year-old men and women, or you know, even sort of 18 plus. The average, sure, there's gamers, but generally not. Yeah. And if you start making a movie for these people, that is basically almost like fan fiction. You do run the serious risk of alienating those other people. Who aren't part of that hardcore fandom.
And they're not going to know. Potentially. I'm not going to know either way. Okay? I'm not going to know either. Teeth, no teeth, whatever. I've played the game sparingly at best.
Yeah.
And again, but going to your point, for years, there have been test screenings, which have changed the outcomes of movies because of these test screenings.
Yes.
And what
but I think that's different.
Has said to the studio, and they've changed. Now we're in social media. It's Sonic the Hedgehog. I don't see this happening with Star Wars, with Marvel, with, you know, people said this about Daniel Craig as James Bond, right? They all came out. They didn't change him. I think for certain movies, like these big movies, but this is Sonic.
You know, but people say these things. I mean, I obviously I worked in radio. I've got a face for radio many, many times, many, many years, like for well over, you know, decade and a half. And the amount of times that we would change, say, presenters on a show, and you'd say, okay, well, you know, Bloke and Bird are leaving. We're going to have, you know, different people hosting the show from next week. People would instantly go, oh, they'd write to the local paper. I'm never listening to that radio station again. I love these guys. Blah, 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 blah. Do you know what? A month later, they were back.
Sure.
And I think we do. I think it's interesting. And I think it's also this shit costs money. So you start to cut into the bottom line of what these movies need to make,
right?
To in order to make money, to be profitable for the studios. And if we start sticking our fingers in these cinematic pies, we do. I mean, further down the road, do we run a risk of these kind of middle budget movies not being released because studios are like, well, if the fans don't like it, the hardcore fans, and then we've got to spend more money doing this and more time, and we're running it late, and blah, 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 it snowballs, and then the studios go, why the fuck are we bothering?
Yeah, and we've talked about this on this show.
Yeah, we have.
About the fandom, and like, you're right. It's like, Jesus, you're going to go in and make a change? Like, why? Like, you know, why don't you just see the movie first? Yeah. And like, maybe the teeth, like, maybe you don't give a shit about the teeth after you see the movie.
But what's different about this one, and I think you guys are kind of missing the point on it, they're not going back into the movie and changing the movie.
No, they're just changing.
They're just changing the style, which to Paramount, like, I don't even know, like, when they looked at this and then put a picture of Sonic side by side and said, you know what? That doesn't look right.
Yeah.
So, like, essentially, if you are a fan, and I mean, even if you're not even a fan, if you're just, like, a casual gamer who grew up with I'm not a gamer anymore, but I grew up with Sonic, and I looked at the character and I said, why the fuck does he look like this?
But I totally get your point. I totally understand. But I'm not deciding whether or not to see Sonic the Hedgehog.
But did you see the new clip? Like the new, how they already, like within one day, how they change it and it looks almost like the character. So like, what were they doing? Like, why didn't they just do that in the first place?
Yeah, no, 100%.
That's my weird question about this whole thing.
No, 100%. But I still don't really want to see Sonic the Hedgehog. I mean, I might see it, but I still don't want to see Sonic the Hedgehog. But it has nothing to do with I mean, okay, I don't like the look of Sonic, but that's not going to make me not watch the movie.
But that's all the backlash was for. The backlash was kind of oddly not about like,
it wasn't about the story. It was just about how we looked.
Yeah,
was,
yeah.
But people didn't complain about G.I. Joe. Yeah, you didn't have a beard.
But when you open the door to these things, it's like, you know, it starts
You're talking about the long term.
I'm talking about the long term. Yeah. It starts with, oh, I don't like the look of Sonic. And then it gets like, well, I don't like what you've done with this character. And I think test screenings, they continue to be invaluable and they are really, but I think that's a slightly different kettle of fish where you're going, okay, fine, we want to get this reaction. This is fine. We've already shot an ending or this is an alternative script or we need to go back and look at that. I think that's very different to people on Twitter going, me not like Sonic, you change Sonic. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I just think it starts to potentially open a very interesting, and potentially troublesome door. And also, then you've got people who, you know, in the days where people are going, I'm not seeing Solo, I'm not seeing Return of the Avenger, the Sith or whatever, you know, and countless other movies or Captain Marvel or Ghostbusters. And it's like, I just think this is playing a little bit too much for people who ultimately, I don't think the things would make that much difference, bottom line dollars?
No.
You know, I don't think people who are saying, I'm now not going to see, so the hardcore fans are not going to see it because it's messy.
Agree.
It gets
you're
messy.
You're opening up a Pandora's box.
Yeah. And yeah, I just don't know if you want it. Okay, a couple of people in the chat talking about this. Ashley Menzel, I mean, it was bad. Sonic looked like a Times Square reject character. Yeah, absolutely. Senor Nerd, but despite the horrible look and the teeth, I really feel bad for the filmmakers going back to the drawing board, and good chance this movie will get pushed back. John Harrison, all the Valkyrie new has got. Okay, that's talking about the Endgame. You might have heard of that movie. Yeah, it's Jenna James. It's kind of what happened with the James Gunn situation. Yeah, no, it's not too dissimilar to that. Obviously, it's a different context, but yeah, I mean, it's trial by Twitter. I can understand why the director wants to make the changes. I don't understand who okayed that design. No, I agree. I agree with you on that. The trailer was like 500,000 dislikes. Yeah, but
I don't think it was because of a 500,000 dislikes isn't just about the look.
But
of
also,
Sonic.
I'll be honest with you, and we get this on
that's
the
a
on
lot.
The, but we
yes,
get this.
It, in all fairness, it is because it started. If you remember when the poster for this first released, everyone was complaining about the look, and that's the thing when you have fan. I mean, it is. It's toxic fandom.
Yeah.
But what happened was, they should have known from the from that freaking poster.
Yeah.
That okay. People are not reacting well from this. Let's change the look before we release the trailer.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
I don't think it's all look. You tweeted about your dismay to this trailer.
I just think the movie looks awful.
Right, so...
But, I mean, bottom line.
And I think that there is...
I'm happy to be proved wrong on that, by the way.
Yeah, I think there's a good handful of people who might think the same way.
Yeah.
I think but also,
I don't expect...
Jim Carrey trailer. But looks great. I want that movie.
But I don't expect, when I don't like a trailer, I don't expect a jumper to go, yes, sir, yes, sir. It's not Subway.
Right.
You're not picking what you have in your sandwich. This is someone else's creative vision. Now, don't go and see the movie or see the movie, but I don't expect anybody to go, well, I think you're fine. I mean, if we did that with... Oh, my God. Can you imagine what would happen with the likes of Harry Potter? I mean, you change this from the book. I don't like this. I think you'll find, actually, then this is... Well, in this thing, it's like... I mean, God...
That's what's happening, though, with Fantastic Beasts right now.
I know, and the thing is that at the moment, the industry isn't going to that.
Yeah.
And if we start buckling, that bridge over the River Kwai is going to come tumbling down.
Yeah.
And that concerns me.
Yeah, and it's tough, because you want to serve the fans to an extent, but again, it goes to what we say about they're a small group, right?
Yeah,
you have to.
But they're vocal, dude. That's the thing. They're vocal.
Yes,
that's the thing.
But they don't necessarily mean box office.
No, absolutely. Do you know what? There's no guarantee that they're going to pay $15 to go and see the film when it's out anyway.
Right.
So let's not get fucking excited about these people.
Watch the movie first because you might like it.
Yeah, you know what? You might like it.
There are countless movies, and one of them we'll talk about in just a moment, because we've got so much to get through before we get to the reviews. One of them was Detective Pokemon, Detective Pikachu, which I was like, we don't need this movie. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Another one, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. I really did not understand why that movie was being made. I thought it looked awful. Saw the movie, one of my favorite movies of last year. Very quickly in the chat, BlackRock316, I can understand why the director wants to make changes. I don't understand who okayed that design. I've already read that one. Zafira, Sonic's look is terrible. I'm just a casual fan, but gosh. John Harrison, I mean, it really started with Cavill's moustache. Cavill's moustache was the fart in the elevator.
Yes.
That was the fart in the elevator that kind of, everybody knew it was there. Nobody really wants to own up to why that was done.
Yeah.
But yes, I think that's a catalyst. John Harrison saying, Sonic never started this problem of meddling. No, it didn't. But what I'm saying is this is the start of things to give. Fishman Dildo, oddly, this hashtag Teethgate might actually help Sonic at the box office. Do you know what? I don't think it will, because I don't think the average person's going to go, oh, well, they've taken the teeth out. Therefore, I'm going to go and see this movie. I don't think it'll have that much difference.
No.
I'm going to say, I think this movie is going to do okay. I don't think it's going to block any buses. I could see it flopping. That's the point. We need to move on from this, Dimitri. Sorry, we need to move on.
We've got so much to do. It's tough. We haven't seen it. I mean, if the movie's good, it'll do okay at the box.
Yeah, absolutely. And it might be, oh, that surprising movie of the year, but I don't know if that's going to happen. No. Okay, very quickly. Quentin Tarantino, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, is going to premiere at Cannes. Tarantino and Cannes.
They have a history.
What do you think about this? Are you quite surprised?
I think this is one of the strongest Cannes lineups in quite some time.
Yeah.
And they needed it.
Yeah.
Because I feel like after the last two or three years, and oh my God, it was just bad. And we were talking about this. I was talking to a lot of people of LAOFCS. It's amazing because Cannes is a festival that no one besides people in the industry and celebrities care about.
Mm.
Nobody. Right. So this year, with Rocket Man and this movie going there,
yeah.
I mean, I expect a lot of talk out of Cannes this year.
Yeah, I think it's going to be, and I think it's a bit more accessible this year than it has been in the last couple of years as well with the content that's there. A lot of people look at Cannes as like, oh, blah, 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 fancy foreign movies, blah, 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 as a little bit snobby. And I think this does open it up and make it, without taking away from what Cannes is, I think it makes it a little bit more everyman that I think is going to be hugely beneficial. I agree with you. Dimitri, on this very quickly.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, I mean, they've had a history, so it's not surprising at all. And for the lineup, it's going to give some weight to the lineup that they have this year. And I think there will be a lot of talk coming out, and it's a great way to... They obviously feel good about the movie to be showcasing it at Cannes.
And it has the feel from the trailer that it's the kind of movie that would fit in well there with with the general style, the tone. I think he's a director who hasn't obviously, you know, Hateful Eight didn't go down particularly well with a lot of audiences. Wasn't his biggest hit by any stretch of the imagination. Really, he hasn't done anything that's been sort of almost unilaterally acclaimed since Django Unchained, which was, you know, a few years ago now. That was, what, five years ago? So I think this is really going to be, and obviously, you know, people talking about the opus for his career, this. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really interesting. And it brings that art level of Hollywood for major studios and major directors to Cannes, which Cannes tends to love.
Yep.
And it certainly is a better fit than some of the big movies that they've kind of shoehorned into Cannes over the last couple of years ago. Hey, let's try and look popular, everybody!
Right.
And it's like, that stands out like a, you know, like a sore thumb. So, one thing in here, actually. Sonic is a video game character. Just going briefly back to Sonic. John Harrison, Sonic is a video game character. I'm well aware of that. And video games are the biggest form of entertainment in the world with rabid fandom. I'm absolutely aware of that. However, that generally doesn't translate to box office.
Never. Yeah, very rarely.
For the biggest form of entertainment with some of the biggest money behind it and coming out of it, trying to get those hardcore fans to sit down in the seats,
even when
you deliver, is difficult.
They've tried.
God knows they've tried.
They've tried.
And audiences reject it. And it's not just about the fans. You've got to get other people in there.
That's
and
there's the rub.
There's the rub. And... Yeah. who doesn't enjoy a rub? I just want to do a little bit of self-promotion. By the way, if you want to follow the show, you can follow us on Twitter at Meet Movie Press. We continue the dialogue there every week. We appreciate it. And, of course, if you want to rewatch the show, if you're watching us on YouTube, we would love to hear from you in the comments section. You don't have to agree with us. It's always nice to have compliments, but it's always a dialogue, but we always like to keep it civil. And that's always appreciated. Okay, guys, very briefly before we get to this week's reviews, Willow sequel has been confirmed to be in talks for Disney Plus, which is great news. Guys, I rewatched Willow recently. God, that's a good movie.
It's fun.
Is it great?
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Don't make a lot of movies like that anymore. They really don't. And a quick plug for something I did this week, Tony Todd. I did a piece with Tony Todd and got some very nice feedback, actually, from Tony. We talk about Candyman and Final Destination, so he updates on what his relationship is with Jordan Peele's new production, and also the Final Destination movie, which is they're going to be doing a new one, basically, and kind of what where he feels and where he fits in with that. So check that out on Forbes, which is great. And I've got some interesting interviews coming up next week with the likes of Lin Shaye, also Adam Shankman, because What Men Want comes out on Blu-ray and DVD next week. So I've got some of that stuff on there and a couple of other surprises, which is great. Okay, we need to very briefly just talk about the trailers. Did anybody see Crawl this week?
We saw that. Saw it at
That trailer.
It's the B-movie we need right now. That's the way I look at it.
Hopefully it's better than The Meg.
I know you hate The Meg.
I hate The Meg.
This is... this could be our... Well, so I think Lake Placid will be better... Might be better, but this is the B movie we need this summer.
It's going to be a really nice, a good fun horror movie.
Yes.
And also murder mystery, a Netflix movie with Adam Sandler and Jennifer. Surprise!
Yeah.
Holy shit! Adam Sandler in funny movie, shocker.
Yeah.
Oh my god!
You didn't see it?
You should seriously. I didn't want to check it out because I was like, eh. Check it out. It looks funny. It looks dumb, but funny. Okay, let's talk about this week's big movies. Long Shot is out this week. You guys have both seen this.
Yes.
Very briefly, give me your love for this.
I loved it. I mean, I am not the biggest fan of Seth Rogen, but him and Charlize Theron really make this movie. That's why I didn't tweet any of my reviews. He should, because I actually like the movie.
Yeah.
Him and... Charlize Theron, they should not work, but they do. And some of the dialogue, I mean, the one-liners, the Captain Crunch line, it's just brilliant. Some of the lines are brilliant.
Yeah. Look, to me, it's a throwback kind of a movie because it follows the formula of the romantic comedy from the 80s and 90s, but it has today's sensibilities, and it really straddles that line because it doesn't go overboard with raunch, and it really focuses more on heart.
Yeah.
And the relationship. And the both of them really work. We know that Charlize Theron can do comedy.
Yeah.
And she really does shine here. And
she loves doing comedy. She doesn't get offered enough of them. I had this conversation with her last year at Gringo. And she's like, I love doing comedy, but she doesn't really get offered a lot of them.
Yeah, and she's good at it.
She's really
good at it.
So, yeah, the movie works. I mean, it could have been tightened up here or there. It's not 2.5 hours long.
Yes.
Which some romantic comedies.
Yeah.
So that's a plus for it. I think if people go to this movie, they're going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
They won't be highly offended by it.
No.
And the movie works because you believe in them and it has a lot of
heart. And it's nice to see. This is what I think people, you know, when I say I don't like Seth Rogen is I think Seth Rogen is very over the top whenever I see him in a movie. This is kind of like a little bit more toned down.
Mm-hmm.
So then his natural charm and charisma comes out.
Yeah. Which is in there. We've seen it in a number of his movies.
I know. Like, and it's just few and far between.
Yeah.
And that's why I think this works. And I mean, even the supporting cast, like O'Shea Jackson.
Sure.
That guy, I don't know how he's not like one of the bigger actors right now, because that guy is like on point and everything. Mm-hmm. Even Ingrid Goes West, he was great in that.
Ugly Dolls, thumbs up or thumbs down, we're just going to do on this one.
Didn't see it.
Which, what is it?
Ugly Dolls.
Don't worry about it.
That's showbiz. Also, Meeting Gorbachev is a documentary that I saw this week. Werner Herzog was doing a Q&A afterwards at LACMA here in LA. You know me, I'm a big fan of documentaries. It's an area that I'm moving into myself as a filmmaker. Seriously, if you don't know a lot about this period in history, or even if you do, it's a really fascinating profile of Mikhail Gorbachev, who obviously used to be the guy who ran Russia. Mm-hmm. He was a big honcho in the Cold War. It's a really fascinating profile. It's one of the last interviews that he's ever going to do. In fact, after this documentary with Werner, he said that he's not doing any more interviews with the media. It's really touching. It's really interesting. And it's a really interesting snapshot looking at how the world is today politically, and not just here in America, but also around the world. It's really interesting to look at how relationships like that were managed effectively and why. If you can find it on a big screen, it's worth checking out. Also, Hail Satan is still out at the moment, and that's one of my favorite movies of the year so far. But Meeting Gorbachev is a, even if you don't check it out in movie theaters, do check it out when it's streaming very soon.
I'd be interested in seeing
it's worth checking out. It's a really good movie. Okay, we've got a couple of minutes left. The screen's gone off in here, but I know we have just 3 or 4 minutes left. I want to talk about Pokemon Detective Pikachu, because there are some preview screenings that are taking place this weekend. We'll do a full review next weekend. This is a movie that I really wasn't expecting to be particularly good. I kind of, when the whole thing was initiated and announced, I remember thinking, oh God, I talked about it on the show. I really thought it was awful. That is one of the really pleasant surprises of the year. That movie is, I mean, I didn't love it as much as some people, but that is a real, it's a sorbet movie. It's a real palate cleanser. There's a lot of fun. It's quite cheesy and it's quite basic. But seriously, there are some great comedy moments and a lot more heart than I was expecting with this. Aimed at a younger audience, but there's so much in there for the older audience to get in bed with. It is genuinely a really pleasant surprise. Scott?
Yeah, I had the exact same reaction that you did. I remember hearing about this, having brothers who grew up watching the animated series and playing with the cards. You know, I knew what Pokemon was, but I wouldn't consider myself a fan.
Yeah.
When we went to see this, like I think 2 weeks ago at this point, I was shocked at how enjoyable it was. And I mean, it's just, it has you, it makes you feel, I know a lot of people say this, but it really does make you feel like a little kid again.
Yeah.
And the Justice Smith story is so, so delightful. And I can't believe there's a twist in the movie. I'm not going to spoil it. I can't believe I didn't see it coming. Did you see the twist coming?
I did see the twist coming,
okay.
Yeah.
Me and Ashley did not see it. But I just thought it was just made for, this is a perfect example of how you can make a movie for fans,
yeah,
but then make it for an audience of all ages. There's something for everyone in this film.
Paging Sonic the Hedgehog. Paging Sonic the Hedgehog.
And I think Ryan Reynolds was fantastic as the voice of Pikachu. I didn't think that was going to work, I'll be honest.
He has the sass that he has in Deadpool,
right,
but toned down. But it's beautiful.
Yeah. And I mean, just the little other Pokemon characters, they all kind of play great into the world, and they all have their own like little jokes.
Nothing
and
is shoehorned.
No, no.
Nothing is shoehorned. It's really nice.
And there's a lot, I mean, there's a lot of mystery to the movie. There's a lot of like, it kind of plays like an episode of Columbo in a weird way.
just one more thing.
Yeah. I just really, I couldn't believe how entertaining it was. And I thought visually, you know, I know it's a lower budget than most of the big budget movies out now. I thought it was beautiful to look at.
Very clean as well. The animation was very clean. It was very, it felt very, obviously it's not real, but I mean, it felt really realistic. It had an element of where you could believe. You could really believe what was happening. It didn't feel like someone talking to a ball on a stick or nothing. You know, the emotional connection between Justice Smith and Pikachu was genuine. It's like they were in the room and there was a genuine connection.
And I mean, Bill Nighy has a small role in this movie, and he's also great. Something that I normally associate him with like kind of like similar roles.
Yeah,
this is a little bit different for him, so it was a nice change of pace.
But all the characters in there had a reason for being there.
Yes.
You know, there wasn't like anybody was relegated. It was a Pikachu movie with other people in it. Mm-hmm. It was really roundly finished. I think that, to me, as a good piece of filmmaking, it's not high art, but it's really, that's someone doing their job really, really well.
And there's nothing wrong with good pieces of commercial filmmaking.
Yeah.
No. Nothing wrong at all.
And people are asking, Jenna James is asking, with the earlier reviews on Detective Pikachu, do you think that we'll get live action, as Veteran mentions various other things like Monster Rancher, do you think we'll get those live action next? Yeah. I think potentially with the likes of Yu-Gi-Oh! And Digimon. I just hope we don't get overrun with these like we tended to do in the early 90s, where it was like, hey, every computer game or every trend, let's make a movie. Because I think trying to catch this cinematic lightning in a bottle for a pop culture phenomenon, especially when Pokemon, while it has a consistent fan base, has tended to go in and out of pop culture.
Yes. But
I think he's done really well, and they've captured it nicely. Dimitri,
yeah,
very quickly.
Recently regarding Pokemon, I mean, once that game came onto the cell phone...
Pokemon Go?
Go with the, what do they call it, the virtual reality thing.
Mm.
So that brought in a lot of, I'm going to say, old, like, not just young kids. There were older teenagers to people in their 20s playing that.
Yes.
Because of the technology. So I think that brings in a whole new set of fans. And it looks like the movie is tracking, from what I read, to do around 80.
Yeah.
Which I think, I told Warner Brothers,
deserved.
I think this is going to be like the start of a new franchise for them.
Yeah.
But again, like Simon was saying, I don't want this to like, all right, let's bring everything back. Like, it doesn't work. It works is because people were looking at this and they weren't quite sure, and the fact that it actually delivers means that they did something right.
And
it can't be Lego movies. Stop doing
this. And not to give too much away, because I don't want to be a big, you know, I don't want to be a spoiler. It's going to be difficult to carry on from this character.
Yes.
We'll have to see which other characters they pick, and I wouldn't want to see a retread. Pick another character from this poker world and go with one of those. I won't tell you any more than that. Before we wrap up the show, Jenna James in the chat, congrats to Ryan Reynolds and his wife, Blake Lively. They're expecting their third child. They are. Congratulations to them. Senior Nerd, my 90s heart is full with joy knowing that a live-action Pokemon is getting great reviews as Zephyra. I just hope there aren't any Pikachu slapping each other. I'm not going to say anything about the movie, apart from the fact that it's awesome. Kamei Egan, I wasn't sold on Detective Pikachu, but after seeing some of the trailers, it's Ryan Reynolds that sells it. Do you know what? There's so much else in there. It's not just about Ryan Reynolds. It really is the epitome of a team effort. Almost like an ensemble cast where half the characters don't fucking exist.
Yeah.
And Scott Boswell, Ryan Reynolds has total control over his Canadian kindness powers. That's a boot right. Absolutely, Scott Boswell.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, guys, for being on the show. Obviously, again, this week, for people that don't know who you are, Dimitri, very quickly.
Right here, Popcorn Talk Network's Meet the Movie Press. You can follow me in the Twitters, at DMovies1701.
Scott Menzel.
Hi, you can find me at WeLiveEntertainment.com. Of course, right here on Meet the Movie Press and LAOFCS Weekly at 11 a.m. today.
And my name is Simon Thompson. You can find me at Showbiz Simon on Instagram and Twitter. Thank you so much for being part of the show, because without you, there is no show. We really appreciate it. Tell your friends, like, subscribe. You can catch us on so many platforms. It's ridiculous. And we will be back again next week. Don't forget to Spanga de Mayo. That's what it's called, right?
Oh, and tomorrow, May the 4th be with you.
Absolutely. And Xenomauer, just realized Extremely Wicked is out on Netflix. It is, and apparently it's great. We're going to watch it this week, and we'll talk about it on the show next week. Guys, have a great weekend. Thank you so much. It's because of you that we're here. Tell everybody.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Spitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of its owners or principals.